Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. I had not actually planned on running a program today. However, the recent events in the Casey Anthony case do warrant some discussion. So, after a quick discussion with my wife, we said, hell yes, let's do it. And joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hey, Simon. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show.
This program was absolutely pulled together at the last moment. And so, once again, we did encounter some scheduling problems with our regular panel, but do have a couple of great regulars joining us. From Sin City, Nevada, we have none other than the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Denny, it is great to talk to you.
Hi, Simon, and it's great to be back with you guys. I missed doing the shows that we from earlier. We were doing them weekly, and it's great to be back, and thanks for the invite.
My pleasure. And how is the mob business?
We had a mob fest or a mobster-thon last night here just off the strip at the Royal Resort Hotel in Vegas, and we had Henry Hill and Andrew DiDonato and Frank Collado, and it was well attended and a very successful event, so we're going to do it again.
And no one died?
And no casualties at all. We
right.
We made sure that everybody
the
understood
robberies.
There was live music last night, and if anybody came in with a violin case, we were all to duck and cover.
Right. And there weren't any armed robberies?
No, although Frank Collado was out in the town the night before, and he said he was in a bad area. He almost got mugged.
Oh, no.
I've got a feeling that mugging Frank Collado could be a career-ending move.
As it is to your health, no doubt about it.
And also joining us from Florida is Dave Neckel, otherwise known as Marinade Dave. Dave, good to talk to you again.
Yes, always a pleasure. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm looking forward to today's show. Everyone's
well,
fine, I would hope.
Oh, so do I. I am also hoping that at some point we're going to be joined by the infamous William Cobra Storves. Not sure what he's doing. He might be taking a nap right now.
maybe he cut his
also,
fingers off.
Also, I do know that it's Peter Hyatt's wife's birthday today. Happy birthday, Heather. And I think Peter is going to try and join us. I don't know for sure on that. I do have a caller from the 586 area code. Would that be, by any chance, Peter Hyatt? No, obviously not. So let us move on to the program. As always, our chat room is open, and we do invite listeners to ask their questions in there, and we will do our absolute best to answer them. I have to admit that legalese is a language that is all unto itself, with all of the double and triplicate negatives. It's like being back in an algebra class. Yeah, you read a document and it's titled something like "Prosecution's Motion to deny the defendant's motion to deny is denied. I mean, it makes my head spin. Dave, I know that you have peered through the documents that were released on Friday, the motions that Judge Perry ruled on. In plain English, what actually do they say?
Well, I think the one that's confusing to some people is the motion to strike. The state filed two motions to strike the motions for the Fry hearings, you know, that the defense filed. The state didn't want them argued, so the judge ruled in favor of the defense. But in the end, it means nothing more than the judge is going to allow the defense their time in court to have their say. That doesn't mean he's going to rule for the defense, so it's not really that much of a victory. It's just that, you know, the state will have to go in there with both barrels on Wednesday and Thursday, possibly Friday. I think that's what you're talking about, those motions, correct?
No. I was hoping to come back to the Fry hearing, which I've got to admit was a term I had never heard before. Living in Mississippi, I assumed that a Fry hearing would be, you know, some sort of deal held at the local catfish restaurant.
You mean like chitlins,
you know,
and
discussing
stuff like that.
The age of the oil. But no, I'm what I'm interested in is the ruling concerning the Miranda rights. What does it really mean?
Well, the Miranda, basically what the judge said was that everything, you know, she was not a suspect at all until she was finally arrested. And, you know, Snoopy and Nan 11 dug up a video that showed Casey saying that she was read her rights when she was visiting with her brother in the jail. So, you know, whether that's a lie or not, I don't know. But meanwhile, she didn't have to have her Miranda rights read to her because she wasn't a suspect. And when Yuri Mellett said, no, I never read her Miranda rights, it was because I never looked at her as a suspect. She was a witness to a disappearance or, you know, of a child. So I understand why the judge ruled the way he did. But I thought maybe there was that little chance that he would throw some of the stuff out. So.
Okay. Now, again, tell me where I have this wrong. The time period in question is, I think, just the initial 2 days.
Yes,
am I correct?
Yes, right up until she was probably taken into to be arrested. Yes. I knew that there would be no problem when she made her statement. You know, she wrote 4 pages, and that was prior to being cuffed and put in the back of that car. So the judge interpreted that as meaning, well, that doesn't mean she's a suspect. You know, the police randomly can handcuff people and say, you're not under arrest. You know, this is just for your safety and mine. So, but I wasn't sure exactly what he would do with it because different courts have decided different ways. So, but I think the judge was right. No doubt about it in my mind. He was right with what he did.
Denny, you have followed a great deal of cases over the years. Were you surprised by the judge's ruling on the Miranda?
I was, let me say, pleasantly surprised. I think it was the right. I think it was the right call. But I, as you know, I got a strong personal opinion about this case, and my concern was is that, you know, a shoe was going to drop that would be detrimental to the prosecution. So I think it was the right call, but I just had that
nagging feeling going in, you know, how is it going to come out? So I was pleasantly surprised with the and happy with the judge's ruling.
Jan, I know that you're not much of a legal eagle, but were you at all surprised?
No, actually, because I believe the way the judge said, she went along for voluntarily, and she didn't. Nobody was forcing her to go where she wanted. And like they said on the stand, she was telling them where to go. She told them how to get there, what roads to take, and everything else. I mean, somebody that's going at, against their own will, you know, wouldn't be doing that.
Okay, Dave.
Yes.
You probably know as much, if not more, about this case than almost anyone I can think of. This motion brings into play some evidence.
Oh, a lot.
Suddenly, the Sawgrass Apartments are now fair game. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, everything that she said is fair game. And I think that's exactly what the prosecution is going to open with. That's going to be their opening salvo. All this stuff, all the lies, right from the very start, you know, she lied about everything. So
okay.
That's going to paint a nasty picture right off the bat.
Right, and I would suspect that the second salvo is probably going to be Universal Studios.
No, say that again.
They're going to open with Sawgrass, but that's quickly going to change to the Universal Studios story.
Well, I think they're probably going to open up with her statement that she made. I mean, that's right from the start. She lied. That was the state will then prove that she had, you know, she created this this fictional nanny. And then they're going to go on from there. That, you know, the nanny lived at Sawgrass. She worked with a nanny at Universal. And it turns out that she never worked at, you know, Casey didn't work at Universal. So,
right.
I think they're going to start with that statement that she made right from the start.
Dave, you are breaking up. Any chance of calling back in?
Yeah, well, let me see what I can do. It's interesting because the phone barely works except I call this number. Let me see what I can do.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Denny,
yes.
From a prosecutor's standpoint, what do you think about being able to open a trial with the Sawgrass Apartments information and the Universal Studios information?
I think I agree with the idea that that's probably how the case will open, and I think it's very powerful to point out to the jury right up front exactly what kind of person this defendant is, and you know, and I have no clue whether Baez and the defense team are contemplating putting her on stand at some point, but I'll tell you, if they go that route, it's going to be a tough. It's going to be a tough sell if the prosecution has already painted her as a complete liar. So if she did decide to testify, it probably would be pretty much worthless from the credibility issue. So I think it puts them in a very powerful position.
Oh, if they put her on the stand, I think it would be more akin to a bloodbath.
Yeah, and you know, the only thing is they talk about two-edged swords. I almost, from just a personal point of view, would like to see her grilled, and I don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, I I just can't imagine them putting her on, but, you know, who knows.
And Dave, do you think that the defense would risk putting Casey on the stand?
No, not at all. For one thing,
suicide on their part.
Yeah, she has no credibility whatsoever. You know, none, absolutely zero, zilch. So, and it opens up the door for the state to embarrass the hell out of her, because she's going to lie about everything, and they can ask her very incriminating questions. They'd be, you know, they'd open the door to everything, and she can't be counted on for anything. So, no, they won't put her on the stand. I'll bet my life on it.
Okay, let's go back to the rulings that came down on Friday. And again, I'm coming from a position of legal weakness, but I seem to recall that suddenly the 911 calls are back in play. Is that a major feature?
Who are you asking, Simon?
Oh, I'll ask you, Dave.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, they're going to be in, so it will be a major issue, because she smelled a dead body in the damn car, for one thing, and she hadn't seen her granddaughter in how long, and Casey stole money from her and stole the car. I mean, this is all like incriminating evidence that this girl is like out of control.
Well,
so everything is going to be in. I'm sorry?
She even called and said that she wanted her daughter arrested.
Yes.
For stealing her car. Yeah.
And that's why the first officer cuffed her.
Right.
Oh, so Denny,
she's in a lot of trouble.
Denny, how much damage do you see the 911 tapes causing?
I tend to agree. I think they're bad news for the defense. Again, it's the smell of death issue and so forth. This is all, I think, very powerful stuff to have admitted into evidence. And I don't see any upside of this for the defense team.
None.
Now, I haven't ever been around dead people. I much prefer to hang around the living. So, you know, for me to make a phone call saying, well, you've got to come quick. You know, my car smells like there's a dead body in it. Wouldn't hold much weight in court. But Cindy Anthony, I believe, is a registered nurse. She probably has smelt the stench of death. Do you think that's going to weigh on the jury?
Well, it should.
I think it will.
I mean, that's like you say, you know, she was a nurse. Most nurses have been around some time or another. Something like that.
All right, let's move along. The other ruling that came down, or one of the other rulings, was that the prosecution were not using the families as agents of the state.
Well,
Dave.
Well, actually, it wasn't the prosecution; it was law enforcement. But you know, same difference in the end when it comes down to the trial. But no, I don't think that they were agents of the state. I never thought that they were because they were so desperate to find their missing grandchild. They would do anything to find her. So they offered their services, not the other way around. You know, there's a big difference there. And I think the defense was really, really fishing without a hook on that one.
Well, the Anthony's even got on the stand and admitted that they were doing it because they wanted to try to find Kaylee.
That's
so,
right.
I mean,
both of them did. George did too.
They went right against what the defense was trying to get them to say. I can imagine they probably wanted them to say, well, you know, they felt like they were being tricked or something. Because, I mean, that's the way it sounded to me anyway, that's what they was hoping that they would say.
Yeah, well, you can see clearly, I think, that the defense and the rest of the Anthonys are not in cohorts with each other, you know, because Baez and Mason represent Casey, and that's all they care about. And Baez made that clear in that courtroom. So I think that backfired a little bit on the defense because they expected the family to come out and say, yes, we felt like we were agents
right.
of the state.
I was surprised.
No.
To be honest, I was surprised that they didn't.
Well, I mean, I think that they know that they're under the gun. I mean, the state can threaten charges. If they, you know, everything that they said is recorded, transcribed, whatever.
And under oath. Right.
And under oath. So, I've noticed in the past when Cindy in particular has been on the stand that Linda Drane Burdick has to come back in and say, well, let me remind you that you said
right.
something different under oath. Let me
right.
point you to the transcript. And then she goes, oh, well, if I said it, then that's what I said. You're right. So they know that. I mean, they know that's just lurking. Every time they open their mouth, they got to know that that little problem might arise. So,
okay, this ruling did not just affect the Anthony family. It also mentioned a couple of jail inmates. Is there any significance in that?
No, I think that the judge responded to the initial motion. The state came back and says, well, we're not going to use Maya Durkovic, for example. So even though that was that they filed that, the defense filed that motion before the state made that, you know, came back and said, we're not going to use her anyway. So that stood in that motion. So the judge had to answer that particular motion, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, well, it makes about as much sense as most of the titles and, you know, double and triple negatives.
I got a question. It goes back a little bit from what we're talking about right at the moment, but I just thought about it. When Cheney was up there making his little speech about the smell in the car and the Miranda rights and all that kind of stuff. They were saying something that he said to the fact that Casey didn't know much about the law, that the only time she'd ever been around any law enforcement was when she dated one of the cops. But her father was in law enforcement at one time, too. So how could he sit there and say in front of the judge that was the only time she'd ever been around anything to do with the law?
Well,
I think
what he was trying to say. Well, you know, I mean, like it was even worse when he said this poor child. You know, well, Casey wasn't a child when this occurred. So he's going to like really exaggerate. And but you know what? The law is clear when it comes to Mirandizing that the general public is not supposed to know their rights like a professional person, like a law enforcement officer is. So I think he was trying to more or less go in that direction.
George knew the law, and he was there, so why didn't he say something right then?
I think that he was just as shocked as anybody
well,
that what
I'm
happened
sorry,
to Caleb.
I don't make any excuses for him anymore.
Well, no, I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying when the cops initially went to that house, this is very, very early. That was before they were able to forge their stories. But, you know, so I think all those law enforcement agents, you know, police officers milling around, you know, there was no chance to really think straight. They were everywhere. So, but I think that Casey, it doesn't matter what happens with Casey now, because the judge decided that no matter what she said, she gave it freely. Cheney Mason argued, but he lost. And but I understood why he was arguing that way, because of the rights of a basic, you know, a citizen isn't supposed to know Miranda rights.
Yeah, but the thing is, his argument was that she had not been involved with anything to do with law enforcement other than dating one of the cops. And
well,
she had been, and he lied about that because she had been.
Well, I've yet to...
It really made me mad that he got away with that.
I've yet to meet one criminal defense attorney that hasn't lied, you know, so...
That doesn't matter.
That's why there's a lot of lawyer jokes.
I'm talking about this case right now.
Yeah, but no, I don't think... I don't know. I mean, I would say that if I was a cop, would my daughter know what my job entails? I don't know.
Well, the way they talk, they all were so close. Of course, I don't believe that, but that's what they...
No, I don't believe that either. They were, you know, everything we learned subsequent to that night, the first couple of nights, is that they were all distant from each other, you know, almost as if there was no love lost.
Well, I
don't
know.
I think Cheney Mason is going to say whatever he can, like I said, by calling, pointing at Casey and saying, this poor child. You know, come on, get real. That girl wasn't a child when that happened to her, went to her own flesh and blood.
Yeah, it was the poor child that was killed and that's involved. That she's the one that was the victim in all this, not this poor little Casey Anthony.
Also, somebody just commented there. Okay, it was Trin Trin just said she was 3 years old when he was a cop. Now, that's kind of interesting to keep in mind. You know, she was pretty young when he was a police officer.
Well, they still use that. At the beginning of all this, they use that she knows this and she knows that because her father was a cop. So,
well,
I mean, in passing, that was said. I can't quote when, but I know somewhere along the line that was said because that stuck in my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to bounce this off Denny. Denny, you were... sort of involved in law enforcement for a number of years. Do you have any thoughts on this conversation?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to ask Simon, I don't know if you plan to get into this before the end of the program, but certainly I'd like to, before we get done, discuss exactly where the Anthony family, the George, Cindy, and Lee stand in this. I know in earlier shows we'd often discussed, are they facing charges, should they be facing charges, and so on and so forth. So I'd like to get everybody's take on that before we quit the show today. I have a bias in this case, a pretty strong bias against Miss Casey and also the some of the other players here, some of the other Anthonys. And I'm still at a loss to explain some of the defense strategies in the case. I'm still somewhat confused. And I guess we won't know till the trial opens exactly which way they're going to go, because there have been different strategies apparently put out there, or what we thought were strategies, what we thought they were going to do. Those have been... basically, some of them discarded now, so it seems. And does anyone, I'm wondering, have an idea of what, as we close in on the trial date, exactly where they're going to come from? Who are they going to try to lay this on? Or what are they going to do? What is the defense going to do to put somebody else in the picture as either the killer of Kaylee or a co-conspirator, at least, with Casey and the killing? I'm interested in what anybody thinks about that.
Okay. Denny, you have actually asked a number of questions. Well, let's try and run through them. Number one, does anyone think that the rest of the Anthony family might find penalties heading their way, you know, somewhere down the road.
They definitely should be.
Jen has the short version. Actually, if she had her way, she'd be supervising the construction of the gallows.
I think they all should be in the same cell together.
Dave, do you think that penalties might be heading their way?
Well, the only thing I can say from a pragmatic point of view, I mean, I've talked to a number of attorneys that are involved in, you know, not necessarily, I don't mean directly involved, but, you know, you might have like an attorney for one of the persons who was interviewed. You might have some attorneys that just show up at the courthouse. And then I have some attorneys who I just ask these questions. And one thing that one attorney told me that really stuck out was that it takes an awful lot to prosecute someone. I mean, it costs the state a lot of money. So unless they do something really harmful, really bad, then odds are, and that frustrates the police too, odds are that quite possibly George, Cindy, and Lee won't be charged with anything. Now, Lee made a deal with the prosecutors. And so he's got limited immunity. I don't think George and Cindy do, but I think what the state's saying now, I think they might have addressed it to the family, not necessarily publicly, but that, look, if you toe the line, if you give us what we want, we're going to remind you what you said under oath. And as long as you agree with what you said under oath originally, we might leave you alone. I think if they lie under oath during the trial, they're looking for trouble, no doubt about it. But I don't think the state's going to give them a chance. And I think they'll come out of it basically not unscathed in the public's mind, but I think the state will not do much, if anything, to them, if that makes sense to everyone.
Oh, okay, Denny, does that partially answer at least the first part of your question?
Yes, it does, and I agree with both Jay and Dave. I think these people deserve to get their comeuppance. On the other hand, I fully appreciate what Dave is saying, that this is a you know, it's also a financial thing, and how serious is whatever they did or allegedly have done. How serious is it, and does it warrant the spending of the money and the time and the effort to do a prosecution? And I suppose in this case, because of its publicity, and certainly when the trial starts, it's going to be back in, you know, on I'm sure the cable networks and so on. Is that, would it look like piling on? Would it look like, oh, the, you know, the poor grandparents lost their grandchild, you know, they've had enough, leave them alone. So I would not be disappointed to see these people get theirs if they've done something wrong. On the other hand, I could understand if it wasn't followed up on by the prosecution.
But I don't understand. Why is it that everybody has sympathy for somebody? Oh, yes, okay, I'll grant you this. They did lose their granddaughter, too. But they're lying to cover up the murder of their child, their grandchild, at the same time. I don't care if it is their daughter. It doesn't matter. The child's life was taken, and she even admitted that she handed the wrong brush to the cops whenever they asked for Kaylee's brush. She admitted that she took Kaylee's pants out of the car and washed them because of the foul smell on them. I mean, that's obstruction of justice right there, and she knew it. She knew she wasn't supposed to do that, and so she should have to pay for it. I don't care what the situation is. She's not above and beyond the law.
I would love to see that, Jan. I really would. I'm just concerned about Dave's point of the financial aspect of it.
Really, I mean, think about it. I mean, prosecutors make deals left and right all the time.
Yeah, but
I mean,
they didn't make it
this,
with her.
This is like a prejudice. I mean, everyone hates this family, which they can hate them. I don't care. But the bottom line is the prosecution looks like it, at this from a different perspective. They're not sitting there saying, ooh, that woman, you know, or whatever. The family is like, they're looking at it from a whole different perspective. And they do have to face, well, the police want that family charged. I know that for a fact, okay? The police would love to see charges later on. But how many times does a police department go to a state attorney's office with evidence, and the state attorney's office either says it's not enough or it's going to cost us too much money for what we're going to get out of it? You know, they threw all the marbles in on this Kaylee murder. So if they get a conviction, which I'm sure they will, okay, that the state is going to be very happy with that. Let everybody be gone. Get rid of these people. Go on about your business. I don't think they're going to sit there. They might go after some of the bit players like Laura Buchanan, you know, who clearly did wrong, unless she went to the prosecution and fessed up. You know, I mean, they make these deals all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if Lee's not going to get charged. But I seriously doubt, unless they really screw up during the trial, that George and Cindy are going to be charged either. They can be as contemptuous as they want to be, but that's not a crime, you know?
Indeed. Denny,
yeah.
I want to attack the second part of your question. And I have some pretty strong thoughts on the subject, so you know I'll take off my host hat for a moment and put on my Simon the Grump hat. You know, you asked, okay, who are the defense going to go after? It's a real shame that I haven't been able to rouse Cobra from his snooze, but the name that springs to my mind is Jesse Grund. They in my mind they have totally abandoned the Zanny the Nanny deal. If Zanny was credible, that they probably wouldn't have fought to get the Sawgrass Apartments information out of it, or the Universal Studios. But they don't have a leg to stand on. Yeah, so Zanny's out of the picture. Sure, maybe they'll mess around a little bit with, you know, our favorite meter reader, Roy Kronk, but... You know, that's going to go nowhere. And that only leaves the Grund family, specifically Jesse Grund. But I'm sure they're going to try and, you know, somehow involve his father, Richard Grund, in the whole deal. So that's my take.
Do you see any possibilities there? You said the other two, Kronk and Zanny the Nanny and so forth, they're pretty much out of it. They're going nowhere. Do you see any potential for the defense in going after the Grunts?
No. I see zero. I think it's complete waste of everyone's time and money. Dave, do you have any thoughts on the Grunts?
Well, you know, I occasionally correspond with Richard, but not lately. I haven't done that in a long time. But I think the defense is beyond being able to use any of Casey's old boyfriends or family friends or whatever as I don't think they would get anywhere with it. I don't think the jury's going to buy it because the state's going to have a chance to cross-examine if they're called, you know, or readdress because they're going to be state witnesses. So then the defense would cross-examine, and if they put him into any kind of a funk, you know, that then the state will come back and readdress and put him back on their feet again. So I don't think that the defense is going to get anywhere by trying to malign somebody at all. You know, they won't win. It's a poor defense. And they're trying to, like, blame somebody else for what their client did. You know,
okay,
you can't prove anyone else did it.
Right. Denny, does that sort of answer part two of your question?
It does, but it also raises part three, which is, I'm in agreement with it, that I don't see any of these options we just discussed as being having much of a shot at doing anything. So what does that leave for a defense? If they don't have a realistic shot with bringing in the Grunz or bringing in Zaney or Kronk, where do they go? I still don't really know what the defense is going to be here. Does anybody have a real good idea of? And I'm not talking just about throwing everything up against the wall, which it might come down to. But does anybody see a real clear winning strategy?
Okay. Before I put that out to the panel, I want to ask one question of you, Dave.
Yes.
And it's to do with the judge's rulings. Does Baez have any way to revisit these at a future date? Did he rule with prejudice or without?
I didn't notice anywhere where it stated with or without. So generally when there's nothing clearly saying it, that it means without prejudice, as far as I know. And Mason said when he opened up his little, when he first started discussing the Miranda motion, he said, and if you decide not to rule in the favor of the defense, I'm going to keep throwing these motions back at you. So, and with that, the judge did not sit there and clearly define without or with, you know. So I think that he's going to do whatever he can. He's going to keep throwing those motions back at the judge, back at the court. But I don't see – I think that that Perry used a lot of case law to cover his butt, basically. I mean, I don't see how it could really be argued again. So, and Mason has a history. Now, I don't think he did a bad job of arguing, but he has a reputation for utilizing old law, old case law, to get his points across. And that's one of the things that really is not a thorn, but it kind of like keeps him from winning more motions. But, now I don't see this going anywhere else but where it is today. No, I don't see it.
Okay, so let's go back to Denny's question. What is going to be the defense strategy? Dave, you must have some ideas, some thoughts.
I was reading some of the comments. Would you say that again, please?
Okay. What is going to be the defense strategy?
Oh, I don't think they have one. I mean, I can't figure it out. To me, I kind of sense that they're going to be, if nothing else, I think they see a sinking ship, and they're going to probably try and address everything at the second part, at the sentencing phase. I just don't see any kind of a defense. I mean, they can't say that she was psychologically impaired, because Mason brought up when he questioned some of the people lately, he questioned Dr. G in particular, that was it possible for the girl to be drowned? So Mason was bringing up these other scenarios. Like, I think that what's going to happen here is they're going to open up with something that says, look, it was an accident. I mean, that's a possibility.
That's
and
what I'm thinking like.
Right, but Dr. G came back and said, look, you call 911. You don't sit there and throw the girl in the back of your trunk. You call 911 and get help. And that girl never did that for her own daughter. Unless it was too late. But still, why wouldn't you?
You don't cover it up because of an accident.
Yeah, I talked to someone recently about it in a pretty decent position, and I said that, well, what's wrong with the theory that, you know, she would probably have to be talking on the house phone, but if they decide to go take a swim in the afternoon, because Mason has brought up this accidental drowning before, and then she never put the ladder back or shut the door, the gate, and she went inside, made a phone call, somebody called the house, and she was preoccupied, and Kaylee went out, climbed up the ladder, and drowned. By the time Casey got off the phone, the girl was already dead. Now, I don't think it'll work, but I wonder why. Would they do that sort of a thing? Would they bring that up?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a strategy. But think about it. If you wind the clock back, if that was the case, why didn't she just pick up 911 and say, I've got a really huge problem. I think my little girl is dead. And you know what would have happened? She'd have got a slap on the wrist. Don't do that again. And she'd be
free. Never be a mother again. But I don't think it would work for a number of reasons. I mean, she waited 31 days. She went out and partied, or 30 days, at least a month, let's say. She didn't tell her boyfriend of this accident. She showed no emotion. It's as if, like, the girl never lived. So I think that whatever the defense throws at the court, the state can go back with all sorts of retorts. And they can respond with a number of different things that would basically tell the court that this is hogwash.
Denny, does that go some way to answering your question?
Yes, it does. It certainly does. Agree here. I can't figure out a real solid defense. Nothing really strikes me as being a clear-cut winner for Baez and company. And, you know, I've thought at times over the last few months the point you raised, Simon, had this been an actual accident and it was reported, even if there was some criminal activity involved, like giving the kid drugs to make her go to sleep or whatever, or even if it got to be criminally negligent homicide, if the circumstances warranted that, whatever it was, you're right, she would have gotten, Casey would have gotten relatively minor punishment, certainly would have been in and out if there was an actual jail term involved and going about her life. So if it was an accident, even if she contributed to it, to the circumstance of the accident, she certainly blew it by going the route she did with the partying, the failure to report, all this stuff. I don't see any logic involved there. Of course, maybe she wasn't thinking logically.
I have a question, if I may.
Of course.
After all this is said and done, the question that sticks out in my mind that shows that her mind is not right, not just the murder part of it, aspect or anything like that, but how did she think she was going to get away with it? I mean, that's the strangest thing in the world. Like nobody cared about the child. She's just killed her? Nah, nobody will miss her.
Jen, you were trying to say something.
Oh, yeah, now I done forgot what it was I was going to say. I do believe that the defense doesn't believe that they're going to win. If not, I mean, that's why they're going through all this, trying to get this thrown out and that thrown out and all that, which is their job. That's what their job is to do. But at the same time, I don't think that they even believe, because it seems to me like they're working harder for the sentencing stage in this than the trial itself, whether or not she's guilty or not guilty.
Actually, that brings up an interesting question. why have the defense spent so much time and effort on the sentencing phase? You know,
they all do.
Not usually to this extent. I mean, you know, if your client's innocent, why would you be concerned about, you know, death penalty experts?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, I think because this, if you look at, I mean, who's following the what's his name, the Ward fellow from Windermere who killed his wife? You know, is anybody following them and seeing how much time and money they're spending on a guilt phase? You know, I mean, this one is a case where everybody's involved. Everyone's interested. We read everything. We know basically the days that Casey cuts her toenails. You know, so I think this one, because it's so pronounced, you know, we know so much more about it. I'll bet you anything, if you go to an obscure case under similar circumstances, you'd find the same thing. I don't think that. I think they all do that because there's always that just in case she's convicted, because this is going to go directly into the penalty phase. This court does not sit there, this judge, and wait for a week. He's going to start it probably the next day, maybe one day off. So that defense has to be ready right then and there, and they're certainly not going to have time to do it during the trial. So they've got to do it now.
Okay, all right. I'll go along with that. Based on what happened on Friday, is there anything that can be salvaged from the shipwreck by the defense?
Simon.
Pardon? Dave, jump in.
No, I don't see much that the defense can do now. These were tremendous losses, these motions. Now, I have a sneaking suspicion they're going to lose the Frye hearings too. You know, the Frye hearing basically started, it was over the lie detector test, polygraph test, I believe. And later on, it was not, you know, it can't be used in a court of law. But, you know, originally you had fingerprints. When fingerprints became big, it took a while for that to catch on. So fingerprints wouldn't work in a court. But this is stuff that's been used. You know, the state even said, we've cite different examples where a court case came down to this issue. And all of that stuff was allowed into court. So I think this is another motion, these two motions on plant root growth and chloroform, that the defense is going to lose. So, and I think that I just have a sense that they're going to lose both those motions.
Okay.
Because,
I do want to get on to the Frye hearing, but Denny, I think you were trying to say something.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was. I'm just thinking about the defense strategy and what they've done so far and what they might be planning for the future. I'm wondering this. If Casey is in fact convicted but does not get the death sentence, can the defense then claim victory? Can they run out of the court and say, hey, we did it. We did a great job, and we kept her off death row. Can they salvage some kind of a PR win here if she doesn't get the death penalty, regardless of how badly they may have handled the defense in the guilt phase? If they can keep her off death row, can they run out and claim victory and use that to further their careers?
Ooh,
that's good.
A low blow. Jen, would you view it as a victory?
Well, maybe in their minds it would be. I mean, they've got their names out. Baez has sure gotten popular in all this. Maybe that's what he would be thinking. I don't know.
Boy, I mean, that'll put him in a whole new category of ambulance chaser.
Well, I wonder if he even needs a law degree. You know, I mean, if he loses his license over all this, I mean, that boy's got a future. He's going to write a book if he wants. You know, everybody like that can write a book. I don't think Chaney Mason would, but he could make a career out of writing books about it and going on all the talk shows.
That brings up yet another question. We speculated a bit ago about the Anthony family. Would any of the, you know, case Cindy or George or Lee face any type of legal issues? What about the defense team? Does anybody see where they have done, or at least some of them, done anything where they could possibly have some difficulties legally after this thing's over?
Well, there is something, you know, something pending on Baez, so with the Florida bar. So I don't know what it's all about, but yeah, I could see. I mean, this has not been one of the Florida attorneys, you know, better hours when they have these two representing, you know, as representatives of the state. You know, I think that they're a little bit greasy, oily. Yes.
Didn't Baez stand in front of the judge and tell him that he had no plans of writing a book on this case?
That's during this time period. Once the trial is over, he's free to do whatever he wants. You know, he can't make any deal until it's all over with. Now, does that mean he wouldn't sit down and talk to Geraldo and say, hey, let's get together after this is all said and done? There's nothing to stop him from that. But from saying that, but so far, no one's dug up any kind of a contract where he's offered to write a book.
That we know of, anyway.
No. And I don't think that you'd find a document that was dated prior to the end of the trial. And I mean the very end. And
right.
Whether he's going to represent her if she's convicted at the appeal level, you know, the appellate level. So I don't know where it goes from there. But I think she's going to be convicted.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. Now,
no, and I think the judge is going to sentence her to death, too.
Right. I mean, you and I both have our ears to the ground. The book deal was something that that there was rumblings about. It was quite a while back, and that there wasn't anything firm about it, but there were definite rumblings, and it was coming from pretty serious sources. So I'd lay money that there's a book involved somewhere.
Well, I'm almost positive something is going to come out of it. I mean, why wouldn't he do that, you know? Lawyers are out to make money. If he could write a book and he'd make money from it, I mean, lawyers don't go into business to necessarily help people. They go into business to make money. So they spent all that money on college. So they want to make a lot of it back and then some. But if somebody flashes, you know, a front fee or whatever, says we'll give you like $300,000 up front to write a tell-all book. What's to stop him from doing so?
Right. I mean, Denny, you're the author. Has he approached you yet?
I was just going to say, Simon, I'm somewhat surprised I haven't heard from him, but if he listens to this show, I'm available. Email griff1940@hotmail.com.
You're a ghostwriter?
I could be.
Yeah, for the right amount of money.
For the right amount of money.
Couldn't we
you
all?
Know, I was just, does anybody have, has there been speculation out there about how long this trial is going to last? Do they see this as being a lengthy trial or relatively
six
quick?
6 to 8 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, 6 to 8 weeks.
Is
and I think that does not include the penalty phase.
Right.
Diamond, will you be doing, once this trial starts, will you be doing weekly shows or updates or what? You got anything scheduled or planned?
You're fine.
Oh, that was aimed at me. Yes, indeed. I can see no way to avoid this.
We've been following this trial for too long. This case too long for not to go to the end with it.
I don't want to share too much, but yes, we do have troops on the ground. And I'm pretty certain Dave's going to be following it very closely as well.
I'm going to watch entertainment TV. That's where I'll get my news.
Okay, I want to switch gears just for a few minutes and talk about next week's Fry hearing. I'm going to try and translate this into plain English. The way I understand it, it's about the use of scientific evidence that does not have a proven track record in the in case law, shall we say. Did I get that right, Dave?
Well, that's it. I mean, it really is the Fry standard, basically, is it determines the admissibility of scientific evidence in court. Or it could be prior to the trial or during the trial. But usually it's done before the trial. So what I understand, let's say I don't remember offhand exactly what that little gizmo machine is that they use to determine the chloroform, for example. That has been used in court for other chemical compositions. So I think the judge is going to allow it. For one thing, it's going to be a precedent-setting decision. So he doesn't want to err on the wrong side. I mean, you know, he's going to I just think he's going to allow it because it'll go somewhere during the trial. Now, then it will be up to the to the defense to take out that evidence, you know, to tell the jury, explain to the jury why it's not it's not a proper science. But I don't see the judge telling him no, you can't use it.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, it makes perfect sense. But that's not the only item up for discussion next week.
No, there's
plant
and root growth.
Okay. What's the beef there?
I don't know exactly what it is. I mean, I think that what it comes down to is that they want this stuff thrown out. Okay. Meanwhile, they have their own expert witnesses. So when it comes down to this root, plant and root growth, one expert for the state is saying, yes, these plants do grow that time of year when the body clearly must have been in there, you know, 3 months before, 4 months, or whatever, before the body was found. So then the defense witnesses say, no, that's not true. But what the defense is trying to do is eliminate that evidence altogether. So it won't be used. They don't have to use that expert witness.
Right. But, okay, I'm as confused as I was before. So
really?
Let's move on to something I understand. I mean, I understand a dollar in my wallet. And I was reading an article, and this goes back to Denny's question about how long the trial was going to be, and it's rumored to be between 6 and 8 weeks. Personally, I think it's going to drag on way longer. But anyway, the article I read said that jury expenses are expected to be more than $360,000. Now, if we base that on an 8-week trial, that's $45,000 per week. If we assume that the jury is 12 people and...
it's 20.
I'm going to be really generous and say 8 alternates. So, nice round numbers.
It is.
Right.
It is 8 alternates.
Right. So, that's 20 people. That's basically $2,250 a person per week, or a little over $300 per person per day. Is that a reasonable sum?
Well, they're not going to put them up in the no-tell motel, although they should, because that way they wouldn't be able to talk. But, you know, these hotel rooms in Florida, in Orlando, don't go cheap. And generally, governments pay top dollar. You don't get like a discount for how much time when the government's involved. I mean, you know that a toilet seat costs $300,000 in the military. So,
right.
So then they've got to not just house them; they've got to feed them. They're not going to probably eat at McDonald's every day. So is it a lot of money? Absolutely, but I think that that's basically what they're expecting to spend. It might come in less than that, but you know, this also includes, by the way, the time it takes for what they're figuring on the penalty phase. I don't think that they're going to look at that and say, no, we can't include that. I mean, I'm not positive that they're including the penalty phase, but I would guess they're looking at that as the maximum amount of money that they'd have to spend.
You know what? When I looked at that big number, $360,000, I went, oh, Lord. And then I started to break it down. And the more I look at it, the more I think about it, I'll just bet that the tab is going to be way higher than that.
Oh, probably. But, you know, you're looking also at transportation. You know, there's more gas that it costs for transportation and what it costs for all those incidental people, all the other incidentals, you know, that adds up to it. It's not probably per person that the final tally comes to, because there are other, you know, other factors involved.
Okay. You know, I'd ask, is this money well spent? But I won't even bother.
No, because it wouldn't be.
Right. But, I mean, might it not just have been cheaper to simply move the trial?
No. Absolutely not. For one thing, you got to move all those witnesses. You got to move the whole court, you know,
right,
to another location. And, you know, the state lists, like, what, 300 witnesses? Now, they're not all going to be called, but they're all potential witnesses. So that means that that in that budget, whatever, they've got to count all those people too, all the experts, whatever. You know, everybody, like Dr. G's in town, you got to take her away from her job. There's a lot of that involved. So the court has to move the entire staff with them. And in this case, because there's so many witnesses, it would cost a lot more than moving it to where the jury is going to be plucked from.
All right. But, I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. How long does a witness last? Like a day? 2 days? And then you can send them home. It's not like you have to house them for 8 weeks.
No, you don't have to do that. But look, I mean, imagine it this way. You got 20 people as opposed to 300. You know, now, granted, you're going to only have them there for 2 days each. But even so, if you had each one averaging 2 nights a week out of 300, that's, you know, that's 600 nights that you're paying for. You know what I mean? At one point or another.
Sure.
But so when you got 20, that's, what's that? You got 80 nights or whatever.
You already said that, you know, of the 300, they're not going to call anything like that number.
No, they're not. But at the same time, you know, no one knows until the trial is underway exactly what's going to transpire. So when they budget this, when they look at the amount of money, they have to take it as everything. They have to take everything into consideration. And how many nights? You know, we can guess that it's going to be, oh, well, this one will be on for 2 nights or 2 days. But they don't really know, because you're going to have a lot of cross-examinations and readdresses, you know, and readdresses and cross-examinations. You're going to have to move the entire staff of detectives and deputies who works on this case. And that means that when they're on call, they cannot. I know what transpired in the courtroom in the courthouse when the hearings were heard on the 3rd and 4th, that Wednesday and Thursday. The police sat there, and I asked Eric Edwards, I said, we couldn't discuss the case at all, but I said, are you allowed to work on any of your other cases via telephone while you're here to keep up on things? He says, no, when we're here, we're here. We can't do anything else. So I said, so that kind of like really takes you out of your function, you know? And he said, yes. But you know, that's the same thing. Well, you don't know if you're going to be called that day. You don't know if you're going to be called 3 days later. Meanwhile, you got to sit there in that court, you know, outside of the courtroom waiting to be called. So that's where the potential expenses come in. There's so many things you don't know about until you're really there.
Dave, like I said, I was just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
It's a question that I'm sure lots of people have asked themselves, and I just wanted to bounce it around.
Well, you know what was really funny was Sergeant John Allen sat there for 2 days, and when he finally got in, Baez asked him one question. He was excused. Now, the court did hold him, I believe, on a two-hour list, waiting list, just in case he was going to be called again. And he did have to come back the next day. But see, that's like the kind of crap that goes on that, you know, it really wastes their time. And you can just kind of sense that they have something better to do with their lives. You know, like, they already caught this one. Go after other criminals.
Denny, I'm going to come back to you, and I know that we absolutely did not answer your question about how long the trial's going to last. 6 to 8 weeks is the best guesstimate, but if you want my personal opinion, probably much, much longer. I've just got a horrible feeling that the defense is going to make this a long, drawn-out process.
I think Perry's going to put his foot down to it, though.
Dave, does that help you?
Well, I tend to agree that it could be, based on what I've seen of the defense so far. I hope Jan is right and keeps them reined in and focused on the matter at hand. I certainly hope that's the way it works out. But I could see them, dragging this thing out.
Okay. One last kick at this cost cat. Who picks up the jury tab? Is this coming from the JAC again?
No, this comes from the Court of Clerks. Or Clerk of Courts, excuse me.
Boy, that's going to seriously dip into his paycheck.
Well, do you remember in the news, I mean, no, it's Lydia Gardner, her name is, but... she came out the other day and said that we might have to put this trial on hold because of a budget cut. And, of course, the chief judge says no way, you know, that the clerk of courts overreacted and spoke out of court or spoke out of turn. But that's what really told me that that she's paying for it, or that department. So before that, I knew it wouldn't come from the JAC, because that, I don't think that's ever been their function. But the court has to pay for the court. The JAC pays for costs like costs incurred with like indigency, that sort of thing, but not not for the not for the jury.
Right. I mean, it, ultimately, though, it's the taxpayer.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But it comes out of the county tax roll, not the the state. Now, the state probably budgets money to each county, but and you know, one of the interesting things about this is when this is all said and done, the state gets so much money to spend. Each circuit court gets a certain amount of money in their budget, and that's it. So the amount of money they're spending on this trial is so exorbitant, it cuts way into the to other trials. So I really believe that there are going to be charges dropped, people that won't go to trial because of budgetary problems. You know, this might be one of the reasons why George and Cindy won't ever face trouble, because they don't have the money to do it after this one.
Right.
I mean, that's a real possibility.
Jen, I'm not putting you on the spot here.
Yes, you are. You always do.
No, I'm not. Have you noticed that Baez doesn't seem to be quite as willing to appear on Entertainment Tonight TV as he once was?
I haven't seen him on TV other than the cameras from the courtroom lately.
Right. I mean, he's completely dropped out of the talk show circuit. That
they all have.
Right. Dave, do you have any comments on that?
Well, I'll say it again. I was reading the comments again on the chat.
Okay.
I love reading these things.
No, I merely remark that Baez doesn't seem to be quite as willing to be on Entertainment Tonight as he once was. I haven't seen him doing the talk show circuit.
I don't think he has the money, you know, and I don't think the networks are willing to pick up the tab like they were early on. Now, he does go on True TV, for example. When some of the hearings are over, he meanders over to the other side of that fence. And so he still has some exposure. But I don't think he has time right now to fly out of town and do these talk shows or news programs anyway. If they visit here, like I think during the trial, you might see a little bit of him. But or he might want to be out of the loop, totally out of the loop, because this is going to really overwhelm him. But I really don't think that ABC, that they already spent their money on him.
Right. we've already bought the photos.
Exactly. Yeah, and how much money did they make off them? You know, I think it was a losing proposition for ABC.
Oh, definitely. Big mistake.
Yeah, but you know, it serves them right.
Right.
Denny, do you have any observations on that their lack of publicity?
Well, you know, I thought for quite some time that they were out there too much, because it seemed like they were inserting their feet in their mouths quite frequently, and I didn't think they did much to help from a PR standpoint. I thought the general reaction of the public to these folks was negative. So I actually think it was probably a wise thing. I'm not a PR expert, but if you're hurting your client or hurting your cause, then it's probably best to keep your trap shut and And as the mobsters would say, fly under the radar.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. We're getting not too far from the end of the program, but there is a subject that I do want to spend a couple of minutes on. The trial starts in May, which is just around the corner. I think jury selection starts first week of May, so there's not too many weeks left. Dave, do you think we're going to see more antics before the trial starts?
No, I think everyone is really feeling it. I think everyone's hunkering down. I think they're going to get as tight-lipped as they can. I think for the defense, it's too much. They're working, you know, they keep losing these motions, and they keep coming up with new ideas. And it's coming down the wire. They don't have time for this TV stuff anymore. George and Cindy, I think they're like nervous wrecks. You know, I don't think that they want to do much of that either. And I think their new attorney, who's basically a nice guy, I mean, I've spoken to him before, I think he's keeping them under a tight rein. So I think we're not going to hear much about that from them.
No, but when I used the word antics, I was thinking more in terms of strange court motions from
That. Well, yeah, sure. They're going to do that right up until the very end, until the judge says no more. They have a right to do that. And, you know, one of the things that they have in their favor is that death is different. And when death is different, you expect the defense to throw a lot more motions at the wall to see what sticks. That's for sure.
Okay, well, you know, today's March 20th. Next week is obviously going to be eaten up with the Fry hearings. They're kind of running short on time to get those motions in motion.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to have to I don't think... You know, some of these motions that I've seen the defense file look like they were, like, quickly thrown together. So I expect there's going to be a lot more of those. But Mason's a real he knows how to do that kind of stuff. And I think that if they can slow this trial down, they're going to do that too. Excuse me, but I don't think the judge is going to postpone it. At all.
Right.
I think they're going to go that route, too.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the judge, Judge Perry. I personally don't know very much about him, other than he seems to have the patience of Job. You know, he sits there and listens. Does anyone have a clue on his track record when it comes to death penalty cases?
Yes. It's my understanding that he's 8 for 8, soon to be 9 for 9.
Oh, now that's a prediction.
Well, I think if she's found guilty, the judge can overrule the jury. So if she's found guilty and the jury says, okay, 7 to 5, they rule for death. I think the judge is going to willingly sentence her to death. He did that in, there were two trials on the John Huggins. John Huggins was charged with killing a local woman. And he knows how to fight the system. He's been fighting it for years. And, but Judge Perry sentenced him to death twice. There were two trials in particular. He had a retrial. The first jury voted 7 to 5, And the second one voted 8-4. But both of them, the judge sentenced him to death anyway. And I think if the jury comes back with a 5-7 vote, I think that he'll still overrule him. Because, you know, when these judges are sitting on that bench, they look out there, and who do they see? They see what that person is sitting there doing. He sees what that woman is doing. So when she comes in during the trial dressed like a virginal, librarian, he's going to know exactly what went on, you know, in her life and the way she handled herself during all these hearings. So I don't think he'd have any qualms sentencing that woman to death at all.
Denny, I doubt that you were aware of those statistics. Do you have any thoughts? Do you see him sentencing her to death?
It sounds like he's certainly capable of doing it. I can't help but wonder about the defense team wanting the other judge removed. What do they always say? Be careful what you wish for. It's I was not aware of the record. I like it.
Yeah, he's got a pretty sterling record when it comes to the death penalty. He doesn't even flinch. So
okay, so let's pretend we're in Vegas. We're at the sports book. What are the odds on a guilty sentence? Start with you, Dave. Start with you, Denny. Guilty or not guilty? Where are you going to put your dollar?
I'm going to put it on the guilty line, and I think I got a winner.
You got a winner, but I'll tell you what. The odds are not going to make you rich.
No, you know, it might be a little more dicey when you get into the sentencing phase. That might be a little more interesting.
That would be the better question.
Right. Dave, where would you lay your dollar down?
Well, I talked to a local TV person here, and he said he thinks that they don't have a cause of death. So she might get less than that. And I said, I don't think they can give her less than that. So I'm going to go with a guilty verdict all the way.
Right. Jen?
Personally, I think she's going to be found guilty, but I don't think they're going to give her the death penalty.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, I do.
I have to absolutely agree on that. Giving the death penalty to 25-year-old, white.
I don't think that has anything to do with it, though.
Oh, I agree with Jane.
No, I think that she's going to be found guilty and not be given the death penalty because of the evidence that they have as being circumstantial.
Yeah. So we, the taxpayer, will get to house her for many years to come.
Yeah, well, and many appeals to come.
Given life in prison, you get eligible for parole after so many years, and she'll be out.
Not in Florida. When you're sentenced to life without parole, you never get out. The only way you could get out is if you get a retrial and you're found not guilty, or you're sentenced differently. But at the same time, be careful what you ask for there, too, because if she's sentenced to life without parole, the next jury could sentence her to death.
Ah.
See,
yeah,
so that's something that everybody has to keep in mind.
Okay, we're in the last minute of the broadcast, so I just want to quickly zip around the table. Denny, do you have any parting thoughts or wisdom for us?
Wisdom is, it looks like if you are a in favor of the prosecution in this particular case, it's been some good rulings and bodes well for the future. So I'm pretty optimistic. And then hearing about the judge and the judge's record makes me even more so. from my perspective. So I think it was a good week.
Dave, your wrap-up comments for us.
Okay. It wasn't a good week for the Anthonys, you know, but it was a good week. And also remember that Judge Perry was a prosecutor, so he comes from that side of the fence. Now, he's not going to show any kind of bias, but let the record stand that when the criminal defense attorneys, public defenders, and prosecutors vote annually on judges, he is consistently ranked number five out of a 1 through 5 scale with the prosecution. So that, to me, makes him more of a prosecution judge than defense, despite how fair he is. And I think that Casey's going to be convicted because he let everything run through.
Jan, your...
The only thing I have to say is let's get some justice for Kaylee Marie Anthony.
And we are flat out of time here. I do want to thank you all for taking time out from a busy Sunday afternoon to talk with me. And, I'm sure we'll be back again soon. Till next week, this is Simon and Jan Barrett wishing everyone a happy and healthy and safe weekend. Till next time, goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Jan.
Everybody.
Bye, Danny.